listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Based on the recent statement of North Korea, I have decided to terminate the planned summit in Singapore on June 12th.
That was the surprise announcement Thursday from U.S. President Donald Trump, referring to a summit planned with the leader of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or North Korea, for next month.
Well, many things can happen, and a great opportunity lies ahead, potentially. I believe that this is a tremendous setback for North Korea, and indeed, a setback for the world. I've spoken to General Mattis and the Joint Chiefs of Staff and our military, which is by far the most powerful anywhere in the world, that has been greatly enhanced recently, as you all know, is ready if necessary. Likewise, I have spoken to South Korea and Japan, and they are not only ready should foolish or reckless acts be taken by North Korea, but they are willing to shoulder much of the cost of any financial burden, any of the costs associated by the United States in operations, if such an unfortunate situation is forced upon us. Hopefully, positive things will be taking place with respect to the future of North Korea. But if they don't, we are more ready than we have ever been before. North Korea has the opportunity to end decades of poverty and oppression by following the path of denuclearization and joining the community of nations. And I hope that Kim Jong-un will ultimately do what is right, not only for himself, but perhaps most importantly, what's right for his people, who are suffering greatly and needlessly. All of the Korean people, North and South, deserve to be able to live together in harmony, prosperity, and peace. That bright and beautiful future can only happen when the threat of nuclear weapons is removed. No way it can happen otherwise. If and when Kim Jong-un chooses to engage in constructive dialogue and actions, I am waiting. In the meantime, our very strong sanctions, by far the strongest sanctions ever imposed, and maximum pressure campaign will continue as it has been continuing. But no matter what happens and what we do, we will never, ever compromise the safety and security of the United States of America. I want to make that statement, feel very, very strongly about it. Our military, as you know, has been greatly enhanced, will soon be at a level that it's never been before. Our approval of $700 billion this year and $716 billion next year, largely due to the help of a lot of the people with me today and standing right here, we appreciate. But we had to do that for our military, and we've done it. And hopefully everything's going to work out well with North Korea. And a lot of things can happen, including the fact that perhaps, and would wait, it's possible that the existing summit could take place or a summit at some later date. Nobody should be anxious. We have to get it right.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump Thursday announcing an adjournment of the meeting that had been previously set with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. For more on that, we have this from RT's Samira Khan.
The timing of this is certainly significant. It comes just hours after North Korea destroyed its only nuclear testing site, fulfilling just yet another condition North Korea agreed to make sure the meeting happens. Now, our correspondent was at the site, and he was among a few journalists who are allowed to witness it firsthand.
We've just visited the Punggye-ri nuclear test site, which is, frankly, no more. We saw three out of four tunnels there used for nuclear testing. One of them, the north tunnel, actually was used for the latest five nuclear tests. The other two were new, and North Koreans told us that they had been ready to conduct nuclear tests there at any moment. So for them, blowing up the explosives inside was the real way of showing how they are ready to make real concessions. Now, the spectacle itself was quite impressive. The explosions looked like small eruptions of earth and rock from under the ground. Of course, we journalists couldn't really estimate as to how much damage what we witnessed today dealt to Pyongyang's nuclear program as a whole. But North Korea insists that they've made the first step. And now, well, now they will expect something in return. Now, we are right now, we're on our way back to Wonsan. And so as soon as possible, we will be filing more reports.
So North Korea is keeping its end of the bargain for the sake of the meeting. But even though the decision to cancel the meeting came from the U.S. side, the White House seemed excited about it. And they released a commemorative coin depicting the two leaders all smiles and meeting just ahead of the summit. But the talks were seen world over as a positive development in bilateral relations. And Trump didn't shy away from taking credit. He even said that everyone said that he deserved a Nobel Peace Prize for it. But towards the end of today's letter, Trump signed off saying that he's looking forward to meeting with Kim in the future. But it seems that North Korea should be a little bit more cautious dealing with Trump in the future.
The issue of nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula has been a longstanding point of irritation between Washington, Seoul, and Pyongyang. RT's Donald Corder has more.
This is a good deal for the United States. North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons.
The deal did sound good, but it collapsed a few years later. The U.S. promised North Korea two nuclear reactors, 500,000 tons of fuel a year, and a lifting of sanctions. But it didn't deliver. Fast forward to 2018, and yet another U.S. administration is promising to strike a deal with Pyongyang. Or is it?
You know, there's a chance that it'll work out. There's a chance, it's a very substantial chance that it won't work out.
I think it'll be very successful, but as I always say, who knows?
You know, I often say, who knows? Who knows?
We'll see how it all works out. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
So are we going to be tantalized with another good deal with North Korea that's ready to go, only to see it fail again? Perhaps the U.S. sees the status quo of seeing North Korea as the ultimate threat as being something beneficial.
South Korea is spending billions of dollars making bases and paying U.S. troops, essentially, to be there to ostensibly protect against a threat up in the north. Now, that being the case, if there were to be peace in Korea, there's going to be questionings, well, do we need our troops there? And so I think in that sense, there are forces that don't want a resolution that benefit off the instability and allow us to maintain these troops and dozens of bases and posts in this small country in a region that we think strategically is important.
Enemies of a government are friends of its military-industrial complex, and having a nemesis like North Korea is a great excuse to pump up that military budget.
The request includes an additional $4 billion to support urgent missile defeat and defense enhancements to counter the threat from North Korea, $0.7 billion to repair damage to US Navy ships, and $1.2 billion in support of my administration's South Asia strategy.
Japan is one ally that stands to benefit from U.S. military expansion, especially after the recent re-election of its prime minister, who vowed to defend Japan from North Korean aggression, weeks after Pyongyang's missile launches.
This election is about whether we can defend Japan from North Korea and ensure we live happily.
And the unpredictability on the Korean Peninsula has fringe benefits for some American rivals. The South China Sea has been a serious bone of contention as of late, with the U.S. attempting to assert its naval presence there, much to Beijing's annoyance. So, the larger threat of North Korea's nuclear program has shifted U.S. military attention that would otherwise be focused towards China. And although Russia doesn't directly benefit from its unpredictable neighbor, it certainly doesn't mind a challenge to U.S. dominance in the region.
What these countries are just beginning to recognize is that getting into an arms race, as it's increasing in Japan, as China is expanding its military operations, it takes money out of the economic sector, damages an economy, which weakens their economy, is a very complicated issue, except for the South Koreans, who are essentially getting the short end of the stick. This is something that must change, that countries, as they begin to take the spreadsheet and figure it out, they will begin to benefit the countries in the region from peace in Northeast Asia.
President Trump's announcement of the adjournment of next month's meeting with Kim Jong-un, followed by a day, the first meeting between the new U.S. Secretary of State and China's foreign minister. This was a joint press conference held at the White House Wednesday between Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and China's foreign minister Wang Yi.
I'm pleased today to host State Counselor and Foreign Minister Wang Yi here in Washington for my first meeting with Secretary of State. Thank you. It's wonderful to see you. As you know, the President and this administration is committed to a constructive, results-oriented relationship with China. And I'm glad to hear from State Councilor Wang that Beijing shares those goals. We had a great meeting. We talked about preparations for the President's June 12th meeting with Kim Jong-un. I had a chance to hear China's perspective and appreciated their observations on the opportunity that is before the United States, the DPRK, and the world. We discussed our firm commitment to maintain pressure on North Korea and to continue fully enforcing all relevant UN Security Council resolutions related to North Korea until we see and achieve the complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We confirmed today that we continue to expect all countries, including China, will meet their obligations and fully implement those measures. China, the United States, South Koreans, Japan, we are all fully committed to a bright future for the DPRK if Pyongyang is willing to denuclearize. Until that time arrives, the pressure will continue. I emphasize the President's firm determination to secure balanced and fair trade investment relationship. We know that the discussions are ongoing. Our trade teams will continue their regular engagements on these very important matters to each of our two countries. I also raised our concerns about the militarization of the South China Sea. We had a good discussion. We have other important priorities in our relationship with China as well, such as stopping the flow of opioids coming from China into the United States, protecting American intellectual property, and upholding human rights and religious freedom. We had a wonderful discussion where we hope that our two countries can build an excellent relationship the same way for our two countries together. I look forward to traveling to visit with you in Beijing in the not-too-distant future and to continue the discussions that we had today. Councilor Wong will now share some remarks, and then I'm happy to take a question at the conclusion of his remarks. Welcome.
I am here for a stopover after I attended the G20 foreign ministers meeting in Argentina, together with the Secretary of the State. This is our first meeting. I hope to establish good working relationship with him. Because this is a stopover, so there was not a plan for a joint press conference. Mr. Secretary of State was keen for us to meet with the press together. And I said, we defer as the guest to our host. Just now we had a very candid and in-depth discussion. We first discussed the bilateral relationship between China and the United States. We both believe that China-U.S. relationship is the most important bilateral relationship to each other. We both believe that our cooperation far outweighs differences and opportunities we face far outweighs challenges. We commend the strategic guidance that our two presidents provide to China-U.S. relationship, and we are ready to work to implement the series of consensus reached by the two presidents, including respecting each other's major interests and properly handling Taiwan and other sensitive issues. And we need to stay clear of disruptions and overcome difficulties and work together to ensure that China-U.S. relationship will continue to enjoy sound and healthy development. We both believe that the two teams have conducted intensive discussions recently on trade. These discussions are constructive and have produced positive and important progress. We believe it is important that both sides are willing to do addition instead of reduction to ease as early as possible and finally address the trade imbalance. We hope that these common understanding could be implemented at an early date through further and detailed consultations. We both hope to strengthen cooperation on international and regional issues and facilitate the political solution to hotspot issues. In general, we hope that with us working together, the cooperation list between our two sides could be longer, and the list of differences will get shorter and shorter. on the Korean nuclear issue that is at the center of attention, we also exchanged views. I listened to the analysis of Mr. Secretary on the recent development of the situation and his perspectives. I want to tell you that, first of all, China is firmly committed to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. This position will not change. At the same time, we believe that in achieving the process or the goal of denuclearization, it is necessary to address the legitimate security concerns of the DPRK at an appropriate time. And along with the realization of denuclearization, it is important to establish a long-term and effective peace mechanism on the Korean Peninsula. And second, China firmly supports the meeting between the United States and the DPRK leaders. Direct and contact and dialogue between the leaders is key to addressing the nuclear issue on the Korean Peninsula. We look forward to seeing the meeting take place as scheduled and be successful. We believe that President Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un are fully able and they have the wisdom to make the right decision and bring peace to the Korean Peninsula and bring good news to the world. And thirdly, China firmly honors its due international obligation. We will continue to fully and strictly implement UN Security Council resolutions on the DPRK and continue to work to maintain peace and stability of the Korean Peninsula. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have time for one question for first, we'll go to Andrea Mitchell from NBC News, and then my counterpart will take over and call upon some of her colleagues for a question for the leader.
Thank you very much, Undersecretary Nauert. Mr. Secretary, Councillor Huang. Mr. Secretary, first, do you anticipate that, contrary to some suggestions from the DPRK and certainly the President's cautions yesterday that there is a substantial chance that the summit will not take place. Do you believe that it will take place on November 12th, that the obstacles can be overcome? Secondly, I wanted to ask you about the decision by the United States today to disinvite China from participating in the military exercises in the South China Seas. You discussed the militarization of the South China Seas, and I wanted to know from your talks whether you have been satisfied with China's response, and Minister Wang, how concerned are you by this disinvitation to participate, and whether you too are satisfied that the meeting on November 12th will take place? And finally, if you'll forgive one more question, Mr. Secretary, you raised the issue of what happened to an American diplomat with mild brain trauma in Guangzhou. And it sounds very similar to what was experienced by our diplomats in Cuba. Are you satisfied with the security and safety of our diplomats in China? And if not, would you take retaliatory steps as the United States did against Havana and withdraw diplomats and also demand that diplomats leave the United States? And finally, if I could ask your indulgence, Minister Wang, yes, if you could explain what happened and whether you are taking steps to investigate the safety of our diplomats and perhaps other diplomats under your guardianship in your country. Thank you so very much.
So let me try to answer them in the reverse sequence that you asked them. First, with respect to the health incident that occurred, we're concerned about it. It's a serious medical incident. We want to make sure and take care of every one of our officers serving overseas. We've learned about it only recently. We are still trying to identify all the circumstances surrounding it. We've notified China of what took place as best we know it, and they have responded in a way that is exactly the right response. They've honored their commitment under the Vienna Convention to take care of the diplomats that are serving in their country, and we truly appreciate this. They've offered to assist us in investigating how this came to be, and our State Councilor Wong and I had a moment to talk about how we can endeavor to figure out what happened here to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again in their country. And so we're working together to resolve it. I look forward to it. I hope we can figure it out. It's very important that each and every one of our officers, wherever they're serving in the world, is protected and taken care of. Second, you asked about June 12th. We're still working, driving towards the date. I hope that it takes place. Chairman Kim requested a meeting. President Trump agreed. We worked to find a date and a location. We've had it settled, and I'm hopeful. What I can say for sure is our team is preparing up and down. The administration, President, will absolutely be prepared for the meeting as well, and I hope that we can have this opportunity, this historic opportunity, to do something that would truly transform this global challenge that's been threatening the world for an awfully long time. Can you remind me, Andrea, your second question? It was about RIMPAC and the disinvitation of RIMPAC. Yes.
The disinvitation for the military exercise.
State Councilor Wong and I spoke about it. I will leave to DOD to talk about that. Only to say that we've expressed consistent concern about militarization of the South China Sea. We had a chance to talk about that, and I will leave to our militaries to talk about their efforts together.
I'm from CCTV. Recently, the U.S. has taken some negative moves on Taiwan, and that has caused high attention and dissatisfaction on the part of the Chinese people. My question to Mr. Secretary is that, is there any change in the U.S. on the One China principle, and also views from State Councilor Wong? Thank you.
It's the same policy that America's had consistently. There has not been any change there. State Councilor Wong.
This is a question on Taiwan and whether the U.S. has changed its policy. That's indeed is a reflection of the concerns of the Chinese people. Mr. Secretary has said that there's no change to the U.S. policy, and we don't want to see a change. There should not be a change. This touches upon the political foundation of China-U.S. relations. We would urge the U.S. to honor the One China principle and the stipulations in the three joint communiques and prudently and properly manage Taiwan-related issues to uphold the overall interests of China-U.S. relations and peace and stability across the straits. Just now, the U.S. reporter asked about a U.S. diplomat in China. Our understanding, this is an individual case of an American diplomat in Guangzhou. China has been investigating this matter in a very responsible manner, and we haven't found that any organization or individual has carried out such a sonic influence. We will stay in communication with the U.S. through diplomatic channels, and we would suggest that U.S. side can also carry out some internal investigation. We don't want to see that this individual case will be magnified, complicated, or even politicized. We hope people will not associate it with other unnecessary matters. China will, in accordance with law, protect all the lawful rights and interests of foreigners in China, especially those of diplomats. That's our firm commitment. On the Pentagon's decision or disinvitation of a Chinese military in the RIMPAC exercise, we find that a very non-constructive move. It's also a decision that's taken lightly. It's unhelpful to mutual understanding between China and the U.S. We hope the U.S. will change such a negative mindset. Both China, U.S. are big countries, and we are well positioned to have greater cooperation at sea. And mill-to-mill exchanges will help to increase mutual trust. It will also help us to make greater efforts towards world peace and stability. On the so-called militarization in the South China Sea, we talked about this issue just now. China is only building civilian and some necessary defense facilities on our own islands. That is the right to self-defense and preservation of every sovereign state. It is a normal deployment and has nothing to do with militarization. Just like the U.S. has military presence in Hawaii, in Guam, and China's deployment is at a much smaller scale than the U.S. It's just out of necessary defense purposes. We don't hope to see any exaggeration or hype up of this matter. Whether the summit between U.S. and DPRK will go ahead as scheduled, I made it very clear that we hope it will go ahead as scheduled, and we hope it will be productive, it will deliver outcomes. There is already good basis and necessary conditions at the moment. And I told our U.S. colleagues that if you want to solve the problem, now is the time. If you want peace, now is the time. If you want to make history, now is the time. Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. At the moment, it is anyone's guess where the Korean negotiations stand. Again, Donald Trump is the wild card. Also, is the U.S. isolating itself on the world stage? Crosstalking the Korean Peninsula, I'm joined by my guest, Mark Sloboda. He's an international affairs and security analyst. We also have Dmitry Bobich. He is a political analyst with Sputnik International. And we cross to Alex Crisoforo. He is the director and writer for TheDuran.com. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alex, let me go to you first in Cyprus here. I sent out to all you guys an article written by Ray McGovern regarding what's going on with the on and off again negotiations about this upcoming summit in Singapore. What's really happening here? Because it looks like we really have a love fest. I don't think that's an exaggeration with the Koreans right now. We had a second summit secretly coming together, then released to the press. Trump goes out, and now he says maybe he's back in. What's going on? Is it the John Bolton effect? Is it Mike Pompeo? Is there a tug of war, do you think, inside the White House? Because the Koreans seem to have a lot of commonality at this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it all comes back to Mike Pence and John Bolton bringing up the Libya card. Why they had to bring up Libya is anyone's guess. But obviously, we know what happened in Libya, where they got rid of all their weapons. And then approximately 10 years later, the U.S. and NATO dismantled the entire Libyan state. And now the country is in shambles. And so, you know, when you look at North Korea's response to what Pence said, it was actually pretty measured. Kim didn't respond at all. North Korea responded. I believe they responded properly because Libya is a sensitive topic, especially with North Korea and the fact they're going to give up their weapons and any right to defense that they have. So I think what you had here is a very poorly timed statement by Pence and, of course, Bolton. And I think you're seeing Bolton, the Bolton effect for sure here in the Trump foreign policy team.
You know, Mark, when you bring up the Libya model, there's actually two of them. And I think this is one of the problems that the administration is having. One was an agreement to take apart their nuclear program and a general rapprochement with the West. And then you have the 2011 bombing and destruction.
I don't think you can separate them.
Well, certainly they're not separated in the minds of the North Koreans.
I don't think, because they're, first of all, Libya did not have nuclear weapons. North Korea is a nuclear-armed state. These are vastly different scenarios, and North Korea demands to be treated as they are.
That's how they got to the table.
Libya had a nascent nuclear program that really hadn't made any advances. They didn't have the resources or the scientific expertise to really pursue it. They gave up everything initially. In just return from goodwill from the West. And several years later, the result of that is their government was bombed out of power and overthrown, and Gaddafi was brutally killed. In fact, Ian Bremmer, the head of the Eurasia Group, put out a he has an org called G-Zero Labs that makes little cute puppet shows that reinforce his political messages. And the latest one, quite tasteless and really disturbing, had Kim Jong-un having nightmares of waking up like Gaddafi, being brutalized, raped, and then murdered by jihadist rebels. And that, of course, is the message that was sent to North Korea. The reason John Bolton said this is because he intended to sabotage the talks.
Exactly.
Right? It was it was easy. We identified it early on that he was one of the biggest obstacles to these talks and any progress being made, and he sabotaged it.
And on top of it, you have Pompeo that is actually Secretary of State right now. Exactly. He was there before he was even confirmed to start moving negotiations ahead. So he's butting heads, it would seem, with John Bolton.
Well, it's true, and it's just amazing how Trump says, I had to cancel this meeting because of your hostile statement. That is his letter to Kim Jong-un. Well, I mean, if anyone made hostile statements, it was Mike Pence who compared North Korea to Libya. And if anyone should have nightmares, this should be Nicolas Sarkozy, you know, the former French president, who is now accused by the French justice of taking money from Gaddafi, using them for his campaign, then starting bombing Libya before all the other NATO members, then seizing the assets of the Libyan government from their bank accounts. So if anyone should have nightmares and pricks of conscience, that should be Sarkozy.
I doubt it happens. Let me go back to Alex in Cyprus here. What I think is really interesting what's going on here, Western media is so Western-centric, and they're all looking at what's going on in the White House, what we just talked about right here. But really, the real game in town is the South Korean President Moon. It looks like he came in and really snatched a victory from the jaws of defeat here. And I find it really remarkable how adroit he is in his diplomacy.
He crossed the DMZ
in every single way he did. That's a very good point. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, Moon is showing that he's very serious about a peace deal. That goes without question. And really, he backed Trump into a corner. And there's a lot of ego in and around Trump that I think Pompeo will play to, and that Ray McGovern mentioned in his article. I mean, this is Trump's chance, his big chance to get a Nobel Peace Prize. And so you have Bolton on the one hand trying to sabotage the entire peace process, which he's done before in the past. And I think you're going to be looking at Pompeo, maybe some other people in the Trump White House, trying to play to Trump's ego. And Moon, I believe, played his card perfectly by meeting with Kim, showing that he's serious about a peace deal, Kim showing that he's serious about a negotiation of a peace deal. And now the ball's in Trump's court.
And I would also say one other player going to Mark here, the Chinese have shown themselves to be quite serious about what's going on here as well. I mean, there's this perception is that Kim went to Beijing for permission. Basically, no. He wanted to inform his Chinese interlocutors what he was going to do, and they agreed to it because it is a solid approach here. The problem is that Trump's enemies in the U.S. and in the world don't want to see him succeed. That's the ambivalence that they show in reporting all this, particularly in the media. But all the other players seem to be quite serious on how to move forward.
Yeah, he made his second trip to China in the last year, and I'm sure that these peace talks were the biggest. And Again, we said this weeks ago already, North Korea and South Korea, whatever happens with the U.S. and the mixed signals it is sending, it's clear that they don't have a clear policy at this point. I don't think this is any type of strategic ambiguity. They literally don't know what they're doing. North Korea and South Korea need to sit down with each other and continue the process, no matter that they need to actually ignore the U.S. and then again, maybe try to buy it in at a later date. But I think it's important, again, this Libya scenario to mention that, you know, Bolton's statements, while provocative, were largely ignored by North Korea. North Korea was more upset when the U.S. and South Korea, against agreements that had already been made, conducted strategic, that is, nuclear drills on the North Korean border. Right. They announced it was going to be conducted with B-52s and F-22s, which are both nuclear capable. North Korea really objected to this quite strenuously, and then it was dialed back in the B-52s were dialed out of it.
But the interesting thing is here is that, maximum of pressure being applied here. You know, but Dima, it's illogical. This is a very sensitive time right now. Mark Ridley made a good point here. President Moon went across the DMZ. Think of that, for the last, since 1953, what that means.
That's crossing the Berlin Wall.
Exactly.
The Koreans did what they could. We can't accuse both North Korea or South Korea of not doing anything for peace. But coming back to that article by Ray McGovern, I have a peace plan for Korea. Let me just remind our listeners that Ray McGovern is a hero. He's a former CIA official who is now a dissident, who recently got beaten, because he wanted to ask an uncomfortable question. But my peace plan, based on that Ray McGovern's article where he says that Trump should be let, dream of his Nobel Peace Prize. Okay, since the Nobel Peace Prize is already discredited by being given to Obama, let that Nobel Peace Prize committee in Oslo, let them come to Donald Trump and say, congratulations on all that rot, man. Get your prize. Meet Kim Jong-un. Save us from the war.
I think that's a great idea.
That would be the only way to save the Nobel Peace Prize after Obama, Gorbachev, Arafat, and others got it, right?
Okay, let me go back to Alex before we go to the break here. I don't want to go into it in great depth, but we had Mike Pompeo come out with his 12 points for in dealing with Iran here. If we compare that, which was all quite ludicrous and very much ridiculed by informed people in the foreign policy blob, it seems to me that does mirror the North Korean strategy, meaning they really haven't thought it out very well. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, we had Pompeo's 12 steps to war is really what it was, 12 steps to regime change. But I think you're right, Peter. We can't overstress the fact that it's not only the Libya model that North Korea is nervous about. It's the Iran model that North Korea is nervous about. But let's not forget, it's only been a couple of weeks since the United States broke their agreement with Iran. So there's no doubt that that Kim and Moon are looking at what happened in Iran.
Mark?
Yeah, North Korea has already made two significant gestures of real significance. They have detonated their tunnels that they use for nuclear detonation, and they unilaterally returned three U.S. spies. So they've obviously done their part. But even Bolton is sabotaging this, not only referring to the threat of Libyan regime change, but by demanding that North Korea completely denuclearize right from the get-go without anything else.
Before the meeting in Singapore.
Before there's a peace treaty signed, before there's any type of phase steps. And this is a way of raising expectations. Bolton actually said that he wanted the talks to go forward as soon as possible so that nothing could be done, to then skip steps later and jump right to more serious measures. We all know what that means.
Yeah, right. Well, essentially what Bolton is saying, first surrender, and then we can sit down and talk. Okay. And this is exactly the same message, gentlemen, that the U.S., Trump administration is sending to Iran. We're going to go to a short break, gentlemen. After that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR.
Okay, gentlemen, let's switch gears. Dima, I just came back from the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, obviously in St. Petersburg. One of the things I find really quite remarkable, not the fact that Macron was there, because he'd just been in the United States and, was got a lot of hugs and, got his dandruff taken off his shoulder, but he didn't get anything. In St. Petersburg, it looked very, very different. There was an open embrace. And we had the Japanese prime minister there. We had Angela Merkel that has visited Putin twice in Sochi, gone to China. There seems like a lot of movement on the table right now. Go ahead.
Well, in general, if isolation is about 15,000 international business figures coming to St. Petersburg, that's a very nice isolation. I wish many countries in Europe this kind of isolation. But indeed, I think it was a success, getting Mr. Macron and Shinzo Abe come to St. Petersburg. However, in general, I don't think Macron really has the power to stop the confrontation with Russia. Unfortunately, the articles about getting rid of so-called energy dependence on Russia, a lot of other discriminatory clauses about relations with Russia, they're written in the laws, in the norms of the European Union. Mr. Macron simply doesn't have the power to change them. And I think this is something that a lot of people don't understand.
But let me go to Alex in Cyprus here. Dima is absolutely right. A lot of this is really kind of written into stone here. But I think we're in a moment right now where people are beginning to look at options, something we haven't seen on this scale in my lifetime, at least. OK, I mean, you do have the Europeans actually considering different ways of moving forward because of the growing mistrust with Trump's White House. Go ahead, Alex in Cyprus.
Yeah, we're seeing the world under President Trump. And just as President Trump is exercising his art of the deal foreign policy practice, it works both ways. And we're seeing the Europeans, we're seeing Merkel, we're seeing Macron, we're seeing Russia and China also weigh their options and look at their negotiating leverage when dealing with the United States as well as when dealing with each other. So I think we're seeing a lot of jockeying for different positions. We're seeing the national interests of countries come back to the forefront. And this is really all because of Trump's instability, his unpredictability, but also his style of bringing everything about foreign policy to a transactional level. It's all about negotiations. And so it works both ways. And the Europeans, I think, are now starting to realize that they can exercise their options.
Mark.
Yeah, well,
I see your dismissive look as usual. Go ahead.
I mean, I think we have to take all of this with not just a grain of salt, but a good dash of salt over the shoulder, because Macron seems to have this type of simpering, egoistic personality where he has to kiss the rear end of whoever he's in the room with and play to, whether that's Trump or Putin. And we saw, to add insult to injury on his recent trip to the White House, evidently the tree that he planted, that he and his wife planted with his teacher, his wife, whatever the story is there, planted in the White House grounds was then dug up after he left. So
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. I certainly,
is that breaking news on RT?
That's not breaking news. It was widely reported. The head of the IMF, the French president, the Japanese prime minister, and the Chinese president. Isolation.
Vice president.
Yeah, the second in command in China. That is international isolation. But these steps by Merkel visiting Sochi again and then visiting China for a second time, Macron coming to Russia, talks of reconciliation, Macron admitting the obvious mistakes were made when talking about reconciliation with Russia. You made a lot of mistakes.
It wasn't very clear who made the mistakes in that statement.
Yeah, exactly. We should be happy for this, but we shouldn't take it for more than it is. This is normal, realist balancing. This is what states do when other states do things that angry with them. They send a message that they have other options to explore.
Mark's absolutely right. But what is not right or kind of out of balance is that and we've mentioned this on this program before, Trump doesn't care. He doesn't care about the implications. And we've said here, he's playing to his base. I'm sure he's got a checklist in his pocket. You know, he's checking them through. I mean, is unpopular and is why moving the embassy to Jerusalem, going out of the Iran deal, being very fickle when it comes to North Korea. I mean, these are things he ran on.
Well, I think we should always remember that we are not being opposed by states. We are opposed by an ideology. And the problem with Trump is that he is aggressive, stupid, dangerous, but he does not fully understand this ideology. He was not certified by them. He won unexpectedly, and they can't forgive it to him, even though he did all the things that they wanted. He bombed Syria. He was very threatening to North Korea. He did everything they usually do.
And continuing threatening of Venezuela.
Yes. Sanctions on Russia.
You know, it shouldn't be Russia. It should be sanction, because that's what his foreign policy seems to be all
about. Absolutely. And the funny thing is that the Democrats and the European liberals accuse him of being in cahoots with Russia. They continue to accuse him, even though he has done more anti-Russian things than any president in history of the United States before him. To me, this is all just embodied in that terrible lawsuit that the Democrats are making, and they want Trump to support them. Just let me remind our listeners.
Don't put too much into the lawsuit there. I think this is a joke.
They're suing Russian Federation, Russian intelligence, Trump's campaign, Julian Assange, Jared Kushner. To me, it's like rag tag and ponytail.
Is Crosstalk on that list?
Crosstalk is not on that list.
Okay. Is Bill Gates and Santa Claus on the list
too? Jared Kushner and Julian Assange. It's like suing Mother Teresa and Stormy Daniels in one lawsuit, you know.
Don't mention that woman's name. We're Stormy Daniels free zone here. Alan, let me go to you in Cyprus. But one of the interesting things, and I'm agreeing with Dima, is that it's an Anglo-Saxon cabal here that is the anti-Russian. I mean, obviously, elites in Europe are going to play along with it because that's the cue that they're given from Washington. But it seems to be very Anglo-Saxon when continuing this anti-Russia rhetoric and policies. You see, the Europeans. That is something we have European leaders coming here to Moscow and to negotiate. Negotiate is the beginning. That's the beginning of a process. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, we're right in the beginning. I believe that Macron even stated quite succinctly that, you know, Russia is an integral part of Europe. I mean, he was very clear in his statements that he does not want Russia to drift further east. But, you know, let's not forget that Trump is not a statesman or a diplomat. He's a business guy. So I don't think he really understands any of this stuff that's going on. I think he's brought everything to a business level. And let's face it, being a real estate tycoon in New York is probably a very dirty business. And you make agreements and you break agreements and you twist arms and you can do a lot of stuff that you know, may be seen below the belt in foreign diplomacy. And Trump is bringing a lot of that to the world stage. And you even had Russian President Putin say that it seems to be right now that, you know, the new rules are all about breaking the rules. And that's very much an allusion to how Trump is dealing with a lot of the foreign policy issues to date.
That's a very good point. I mean, you know, it's breaking all the rules. But, you know, if you're always breaking the rules, you can't make a new rule. And that is the big problem here right now, Mark.
I think Trump's art of the deal is like a mafia don. When John Bolton brought up, the Libya option for North Korea. Trump replied, well, that's not what we're planning. The Libyan option, we totally decimated them. That was a decimation, he said. And in case you don't know what that means, that was with the Roman legionary practice of killing one out of every 10 people. Yeah. And North Korea has already been through worse than that through the U.S. Hellacious bombing campaign of North Korea during the North Korean War. So that it couldn't have been well received there. And then he said, that's only if you don't sign a deal, that's the only time decimation. So either sign on the bottom line or get decimated. That is a mafia don threat. Simultaneously, this whole St. Petersburg International Economic Forum was overshadowed by Trump's war on global trade. And not not just globalization, but trade with allies. Trump has put effectively sanctions on South Korea. He's put tariffs, rounds of tariffs on China, sanctions on Russia, Syria, North Korea, Iran. He's promising the biggest sanctions in world history because Trump with his little fingers loves everything big, right? Bigger than it is. He likes to exaggerate the size of everything. But he's also threatening sanctions in two ways over both Iran and the completion of Nord Stream against his own allies in the EU, right? Which is a sure to you know, really roil them in Europe.
What's really interesting is I'm glad you brought up the energy security here at Kadima, because, you know, there's a lot of things that the Europeans will go along with the Americans traditionally, not specifically with Trump now, but their energy security is something that is very real and very much theirs. And I see that and the Germans are leading that, a pushback that they will have Nord Stream. We also have the pipeline that will be coming through Turkey. So, I mean, it looks like that's iffy one, because Turkey is always a wild card. But I mean, this is an issue that is very real and very important to them. And Russia is a reliable partner. We've seen that.
Absolutely. Okay. But there are two different things, the European Union and Europe. Europe needs Russian gas. The European Union needs to damage Russia. Basically, why did they destroy the project of South Stream? The South Stream was a savior for Europe. You know, it was going to bring cheap energy to the two most problematic states, to Italy and to Greece. But the EU did everything to foil the project.
To be fair, the Germans ruined South Stream so that they could get Nord Stream and become the energy hub to
European
control
unity.
Energy to the rest of Europe. That's the Germans.
All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We've run out of time here. Many thanks to my guests here in Moscow and in Cyprus. This is the end of our broadcast segment. Stay with us for the extended version on our YouTube channel. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.